If you've ever been married, or if you've ever been baptized, those are two occasions you never forget, right? Yeah, you remember those. About a year and a half after my wife and I were married in 1960, a couple days ago, we were going to go home and witness to our parents. Neither my parents or my wife's parents were Christians. You know how excited you were when you were baptized? You couldn't wait to tell somebody, right? Tell your folks first. We were 7 hours away by car, so we didn't go home too often. So we went home, and my wife was up with her family and looking for an opportunity. I was with my family looking for an opportunity. It came. My father was an electrical contractor, and he also fixed anything that went wrong in your house, radio, television, waffle iron, you name it. He could fix it. And his shop was right next to the house. Mom was out in the office because she did his book work. So I went into the office, and she was there alone, and I thought, well, now's a good time. Mom, Mary and I were baptized. And it's such a great thing. And while I just started to talk to her, she went to the file drawer. She picked out a piece of paper, gave it to me. I read it. It was a bill for $600 to the head elder of the local Seventh-day Adventist church. It was 8 years old at this time, because when I was a freshman in high school, he went bankrupt. Now, it's not a sin to go bankrupt. He had a mill at the edge of town, a sawmill. But there's a law that a born-again Christian recognizes that's even higher than the law of bankruptcy. You know what it is? Restitution. The Bible talks a lot about restitution. You'll find it in Leviticus, Exodus, the Psalms, other places. Kind of went like this. If you stole your neighbor's sheep, you gave him how many back? Two. Some cases, if something was done wrong, you gave back what was lost plus 20%. Depends on what it was. But restitution was taught. But that was the Old Testament. And someone would say, yeah, but how about the New Testament? Well, it's taught there too. Luke, the 19th chapter, we find Jesus going through the town of Jericho. And Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, but you know, he was a little man and he couldn't see over the crowd. So he ran ahead of the crowd, climbed up in a sycamore tree, and waited for Jesus to come to him. Of course, Jesus knew he was there, knew he was waiting. And when Jesus got there, he stopped, the crowd stopped, and he said, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house today. And as soon as he spoke to Zacchaeus, the crowd started mumbling, grumbling. Why? Because Zacchaeus was a publican, a tax collector, a Jew collecting taxes from Jews. He was hated like the rest of them. But Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. What's that? That means to be a tax collector, you had to bid on the job. So that means Zacchaeus had money to start with, because the highest bidder gets a job. He had a bigger province than most of the tax collectors, so he was a chief tax collector. So he could make money from all the people working under him as they go out in his province, cheating the people. And then he could cheat the people on top, and he got very rich. So he was a very rich man. And the people out there knew it. They'd all been cheated by Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus said, Lord, I give half my goods to the poor. And if I've taken anything from anybody, I'll restore it fourfold. What did Jesus say? He didn't say, forget it. No problem. No, that isn't what he said. He said, salvation has come to this house today. Why? restitution. Even if it takes the rest of a person's life to restore what was lost, what was caused to be lost, do it a little bit at a time. My father would have accepted that, like most anyone. My mom went on to say, it was kind of interesting, in gathering time rolled around. Well, the pastor of a local Adventist church took the head elder with him, and they went to all the businessmen. My father, being one of the businessmen, came to him. The pastor had no knowledge of this. And the pastor comes in and shows my father the brochure and gives a little spiel about it. My dad took a piece of paper, wrote $600 on it, and handed it to the pastor. He said, if you can collect that money from the man standing next to you, you can put it all in the in-gathering program, because I can't get it. Well, the pastor, of course, says, what's he going to say? Nothing. What's the head elder going to say? Nothing. Head drop, walk out. So I was pretty upset, right? So the next time we came home, I'm going to go see this head elder, make sure I'm in the church. Because I have ought with a brother and I do Matthew 18, right? So that's what I did. Came home the next time, I'm in church, I'm looking for this head elder. I didn't have to look for him, he looked for me. Conscience, right? And I was blown away. He said, Jim, yes, I'd like to invite you and your wife and your young son to dinner. What? Well, the steam started going out a little bit. Really? Okay. So I went to his house, had a nice meal. We're talking about the situation. I don't remember exactly what was said, but I learned something about my situation as well. This was between the Holy Spirit, the head elder, and my father. My job was to do what? Forgive him. A lot easier when you do it God's way. And that's where I left it. So I thought, well, the door was shut for me witnessing to my mom that day. I went up to my wife's parents' place. I was anxious to talk to Mary. How did it go? Not so good. But what happened? Well, my wife's mother worked in an auto parts store. She was a bookkeeper, and she also worked the counter. And there was another Seventh-day Adventist church in our little area, one in town and one 10 miles out of town in the country. And there were two elders in that church that ran up a big bill at the auto parts store, of course, where my mother-in-law worked. Months and months went by, never paid it, but they had plenty of money to take their motorhomes and go to the beach. And my mother-in-law noticed these things. And she said, why don't your people pay their bills? That's the very same thing my mother said to me when she went for this paper. Jim, why don't your people pay their bills? And I got thinking, we are a people, aren't we? We're God's chosen people, His treasure, right? To witness for Him. So is it important how we witness? We open doors or we shut them? By how we witness. And I thought, wow. We were pretty discouraged on our first trip home. Going to witness for Jesus. Just didn't seem to go well at all. Deuteronomy 7th chapter, verse 6 says this, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for Himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. We're no better than anyone else, so why are we special? His special treasure. Why? Because we've been given the truth. And when we share the truth does what? Sets you free. God has called us to set people free from whatever shackles they have, burdening them down. Set them free. The gospel sets people free. That's what we've been called to do. Well, several years went by. We moved from where we were, went to another church, Northern Washington. We're going to have a series of evangelistic meetings. Well, you know how much money that can cost. Thousands. Well, this is going to be a short one. Just 3 days, 3 nights, 3 evenings. Friday, Sabbath evening, Sunday. So we had some brochures printed up. And there were going to be 3 speakers. I was one of the speakers, 2 other elders in the church. We had our pictures taken, put in a brochure. There was a town to the east of the church we went to and a town to the west. We were in the country. I took the town to the east. Another man took the town to the west. And we went there with brochures announcing the meetings. And we decided that we would meet back in the church when we're done at a certain time and see how it went. So, I went to the town to the east, went door to door, covered just about every house in town. He did the same thing in the town to the west. And in many of the houses I went to, hand them the brochure, they would look at the pictures and they would say, "Is this man going to be one of the speakers?" "Yes, I'm not coming if he's going to be a speaker." Happened too much. Got back, met the man, and we talked about how did it go. And right away he said, "Jim, did you run into the same problem I did?" "Well, what problem are you talking about?" When they looked at a certain picture in there, they weren't going to come because of that man. "Yeah, I had the same problem." God called us to be what? A witness. What kind of a witness? A special treasure unto Him. To free people from whatever shackles them. But we close doors when we give the wrong witness, don't we? How many people do you think came to that evangelistic series? Nobody. Nobody. We sometimes wonder, there are many reasons why people don't come to our evangelistic series. Devils at work. There are a lot of reasons. But one of the main ones is the way we're living. Take the one person, the body of Christ, even one person living the wrong way can do a lot of damage in the body of Christ, can it? A lot of damage. Let's take stock of how we're living and live for Christ. That's the only way to live. Well, that's a negative witness. Now I'm going to have a story of a positive witness. News Review, 1993. There's a picture of a woman on the front page. Jet black hair. Rather nice looking. I think I recognize her. You probably can't see the picture too well. But I know her. She's my wife, Mary. How in the world did she get her picture on the front page of the News Review? Well, back in 1993, Mary taught a quilt class at a fabric shop called the Country Lady in Roseburg. And the owner of that shop asked Mary if she would teach quilt class. Well, she ended up teaching a quilt class for many years there. She did. And this is what the person who wrote the article said about Mary. "One small piece at a time. Disease can't slow quilters' nimble fingers. Don't be afraid to kick off your shoes in Mary Knight's quilting class. Chances are you won't be first to do so. When Knight walks around in her stocking feet, it adds to the casual, stress-free atmosphere she strives for in her twice weekly classes. But ambiance isn't the primary reason the instructor casts her shoes aside. Multiple sclerosis is. So it was an inspirational piece they put in the paper. And that's exactly what happened. The stress-free atmosphere she gave in her class was what won the hearts of the ladies that came there. And many, many came to her class through the years. And if you know my wife, Mary, she doesn't like the spotlight on her. But she agreed to let me tell this story because it fit perfectly with my message today. So I talked her into it. But this is how we witness. And you know, folks, from that day, 28 years ago, to now, every now and then, when we're in town shopping, someone will come down the aisle, some woman will see Mary, and their face will light up, and they come and give her a hug to this day. That's a witness. That's the special treasure we're called to. And in this church, we have a group called Merrymakers. They're doing that, quilts. It's a service for Christ. At this time, in the paper it said, Mary had 148 quilts she'd made. Well, if you add on from that time, 28 years ago, to now, take a guess how many quilts she's made. Over 1,300. So there are a lot of people out there with warm hearts and a warm nap having their quilt. But that's the witness that God is looking for. No matter what we do, what our talent is, God is looking for us to witness for Him. Acts 9, 36 to 42. Acts 9, 36 to 42. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her and laid her up in the upper room, and since Lydia was near Joppa and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him, "Do not delay, come to him." Then Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room. All the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics, the garments which Dorcas had made while she was with him. But Peter put them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, "Tabitha, arise." And she opened her eyes. And when she saw Peter, she sat up. Then he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout Joppa, and many people believed on the Lord. Dorcas. Well, we have the same thing going on here. We have a cooking club as well, witnessing for the church and for the community, doing the work of Christ, being a witness, positive witness. There's so much good that can be done and is being done. Some of us today might be called to witness in a court. We're in the last days. Do you believe we're in the last days? We're in the last days. And we're told, Spirit of Prophecy, that some of us are going to be called into courts to give a testimony, a witness for Christ. Are we ready? She says there are men of giant intellect on those panels. Giant intellect. So, if we don't know what we're talking about, they're going to chew us up and spit us out. So, are we ready? Well, I haven't been called into that situation, but I was called in a situation kind of like it, so I kind of got a preview of what it might be like. Many, many years ago, I was a youth leader in the Port Orchard Church in Washington, a couple of years there. Had about a half a dozen teenagers that came to the class weekly. There was a brother and a sister. He was probably 18. She was 17. Came all the time. They came with her mother. They were all Seventh-day Adventists, but the father didn't come. He wasn't an Adventist. And he did not like Ellen White. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but I was having a series on all the prophets in the Bible, and I started in Genesis and went clear through to Revelation, and we talked about God's prophets and messengers. And so I naturally finally got to Ellen G. White and talked about her. Well, the brother and sister, they believed in Ellen White. They enjoyed the series. When they were home, father found out that they were learning about Ellen White. This boy was about my height, really powerful boy, just strong as can be. And he didn't show up for class for a couple of weeks. And his sister came to me almost in tears and said, "Mr. Knight, the reason my brother isn't with me in the class, my father beat him up." And I got thinking, he must be a big man to beat this boy up. And she said, "Mr. Knight, my father would like to meet with you. Would you come?" "Of course, no problem." "Could you come this afternoon, say 3 o'clock? "Sure." So I went to the house. Door opens. Huge. This guy is big. "Hello, Mr. Knight. Follow me." So we went across the living room into a staircase down into the basement. There's nothing in the basement but a table and two chairs and one Bible in the middle on one side of the table. He sits there. He says, "Have a chair." "Okay, have a chair." He says, "Mr. Knight, yes, this is my Bible." And he shoved it over to me. He said, "I want you to tell me that Ellen G. White is not a witch, but a true messenger of God. And you prove it from my Bible." And he's angry. "What would you do?" "You'd pray for a miracle. Same thing I did. Lord, what am I going to do? What does the Bible say? When you're brought into that strait, think not of what you're going to say or do, for it will be given to you at that time." I claimed that promise. I didn't know what I was going to say. Wow, what a situation. I just remember opening the Bible to Genesis, and I started talking for probably a half hour. Ended up in Revelation. Do I remember anything I said? No. But halfway through, I noticed his countenance changed from anger to acceptance. His expression changed. And when I got done, he said, "Well, Mr. Knight, you know your Bible, or in my case, mine, better than I do." And he was friendly. And he talked in a very friendly manner. We were getting along great. I left there that day in good graces. His son came back to church. Everything was good again. But we're going to be called, maybe some in here today, to witness for Christ in these circumstances like this. But we can do it. But we've got to remember, there had to be something back there in my memory, back somewhere, to bring it to my mind, right? So don't think we can just go on and not study and be ready. That's not the way it works. be ready. It has to be stored at some time. I had it stored sometime. But I needed it there. And I needed it now. And God gave it to me, and I couldn't tell you what I said. But it was exactly what he needed to hear. Exactly. God will do that for you and for me when the time comes, if we store his word in our minds and in our hearts. Well, we may be called upon to witness in a family situation. And those can be sticky, right? Pretty sticky. About 57 years ago, I was a coal porter. And on our coal porter team, there was another man named Floyd. We became good friends. He had a wife and a couple of kids, so did we. We became friends, spent a lot of time together. And once a week, we would coal porter together to encourage one another. Because if you're a coal porter, you need encouragement. Because the devil's on your back every step you take. You're on the front lines of the gospel mission. Front lines. And there are bullets flying everywhere from Satan. You're out there. So we would encourage one another. I'd take one house, he'd take the next. And that's why we did it for one day. And the rest of the week we went on our own. As I got to know Floyd, he told me about his former life. At the time, he was married to a wonderful woman, had two children, great family situation. God gave him a good situation. But it wasn't always that way. In his former life, so to speak, before he came to Christ, he was married. You know, as the world goes, they were getting along in the world. But when he heard the three angels' message, he accepted it. Became a born-again Christian. But his wife didn't want anything to do with it. Sometimes that happens. Nah, stay with me, Floyd. Stay in the world. We're having fun, aren't we? Come on. Stay in the world. Floyd didn't want to stay in the world. He wanted to follow Jesus. So he determined to do so. Well, she was going to make life as miserable as she could for Floyd. Well, Floyd worked in a garden. He had a nice garden. There was a gate between him and the neighbor. Neighbor had a cow. Gates open. Wife probably opened it. Cow destroys Floyd's garden. Oh, well. Floyd will get over that. Floyd would have his devotions in the house. He'd find someplace quiet and alone. His wife would find out where he was, and then she'd keep looking around, and when he knelt down to pray, she'd come in and kick him, start kicking him. What she wanted him to do? She wanted him to strike her back so she could say, "Hypocrite, you're not going to be a follower of Christ, Floyd. Join me in the world." She wanted him to strike back, but he didn't. He just protected himself from her blows best he could. She'd give up and go. Next time he's in a devotion, she'd find him, wait till prayer time, kick him. Well, this went on for a while. One day, Floyd comes home from work one evening. House is empty. Furniture's gone. Wife's gone. Their one son is gone. Later, she divorced him. Wow. Felt like Job, didn't he? But as Job, God gave what? Twice as much to Job? Did to Floyd. Got remarried, got a wonderful wife, family. But he may be called a witness in a family situation. When you became a Seventh-day Adventist and your relatives weren't, was that a little tricky? Yeah, it can be real tricky, can't it? But they're looking at us. We're a witness for Christ. They're watching us closely. And how we handle that has a great deal to do with how many doors are going to be open and how many doors are going to be shut. I'd like to close with a text in Acts 22:15. Acts 22:15. For you will be his witness to all men of what you have seen and heard. This was told to Paul after the road to Damascus experience, when he received his sight, was baptized, and born again. He was told by God, you will be my witness, Paul, to the whole world. Well, we're a witness. We're a special treasure of God, not because we're better than anyone else, because we're given the truth and we're called to share the truth. And that's what we've been called to do. So may God strengthen each one of us, because the world is watching. May we be a true witness. And now I know some song leaders will be coming up.